Assalamu alaikum, and thank you for tuning in to another broadcast of Religion Means a Lot presents The Radiant Brilliance Show with your host, Kimberly Kalima, the show where culture meets conversation. This evening, we'll be speaking with an exceptional young lady by the name of Hannah Hassan. She is a spoken word artist, a director, and a writer. We all know that art, photography, painting, poems, songs are one way to chronicle the growth of a culture. It also pushes forward towards the next step in the development of the people. Tonight, we'll be speaking with Hannah Hassan, the director of Shahada Stories, to find out how that idea came about, what it took to put it all together, and the benefits you would like to offer to the community. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Hannah. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Radiant Brilliance Show.
Oh, alaikum assalam. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Earlier this week on my Facebook page, I shared a link from your effort, the Shahada Stories. If you could elaborate on exactly what that's about, how it came about, and what kind of goes on behind the scenes of pulling a production that type together.
Oh, sure. So Shahada Stories, I say, is my baby, and it's been around for quite a while. I've always been obsessed with, like, people's stories. Maybe I'm a little nosy, I don't know, but I like to hear about people and who they are, where they come from, and all of that good stuff. So when I was in college, I went to see an episode of Monologue, the Vagina Monologue, to be exact, on stage. And when I came back from it, I was intrigued. There were some stories that were extremely crass and that I was like, wow, you know, I would never, like, take, I don't know, a child or my mom or something to see that. But I enjoyed the art of storytelling. So I thought to myself then, how cool would it be to have our stories on the stage, Muslim? And so that was just a fleeting, you know, thought or whatever. But after that, shortly after that, I started to get stories from people. I would never forget the first interview I did, which was my now sister-in-law. I sort of, not a microphone, but a recorder in front of her. And got her story. She was a little bit intimidated. And I was kind of trying to, I don't know, intimidate her because she was marrying my brother. But
oh, wow.
She held her own, needless to say. But anyway, I started getting people's stories then. And I've been asking people for their stories for years since then. That was about 2000 and maybe five.
Oh.
And everybody who knows me intimately kind of knew about Shahada Stories. So a couple of years ago, right before New Year's, I was sitting at dinner with my husband, my brother and his wife, and two of my very close friends, and we were talking about our plans for the new year, and they challenged me, and they said, it's time for Shahada Stories. And I was extremely scared, because essentially everything that I've ever done, for the most part, has been with groups of people, and I knew that I was going to have to do Shahada Stories, a lot of the planning and execution by myself. And I'm a group person, so I was afraid of that. But I said, okay, we'll do a show this year. And so I immediately after that started planning. And the process is pretty simple. I interview people, and I get their stories. After they tell me their stories, I then write them for the stage. So my master's is in fine art, and it's in creative writing. So I learned a lot about writing for the stage and writing for scripts and film and things of that nature. That's totally different than how somebody typically would tell you a story. Sometimes you have to cut things out. You have to add things in, that kind of thing. One thing I wanted to do was, one, always make sure that the stories are authentic. So I don't just add lies in there. I make sure that they're true. And two, to make sure that it's entertaining. So when I interview people, I let them know, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to write your story. And when you come and see it on stage, you know, it might not be like the exact, like all of the words that you just told me, but it's going to be written well in a way that people will enjoy it. So anyway, I interview people, I get their stories, and then I had a group of individuals who are artists who mostly are people who are willing to stand up in front of people and, you know, perform and that type of thing. And I assign stories to them. So when people see Shahada Stories live, 9 times out of 10, the person who's telling the story, that's not their story. And I do that for a few reasons. One is to protect the anonymity of the person who shared their story with me. Oftentimes, these stories are very deep. They're very personal. And, you know, our Muslim community is vast, but it's also small. And people know each other, so I don't want to expose anyone. Another reason is when people tell their own stories, they have the tendency to get up there and just go off on a tangent. As opposed to going on the script that I wrote or the story that I wrote, they tell it on their own, and it ends up really long. And I learned that the hard way the first show, because I had a story where I let a young lady tell her own story, and she got up there and she went totally off of the script, and her story was 19 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, I assigned the story to a storyteller. They memorize it, get familiar with it, and we have practices and things of that nature. Sometimes our practices are over the phone because these people might be in different cities. I've had one gentleman come all the way from Philadelphia to participate in the show. Yeah, another sister, she comes all the way from Atlanta to participate in the show. So we'll do practices, and then I promote it and do all of behind-the-scenes sort of marketing and preparation and everything like that, and then the show comes together on the night of. The first show was in Charlotte. It was sold out. The best thing about it to me was the feeling that was in the room. It was, for lack of a better term, magical. And one thing that I really enjoyed was seeing couples come in. A lot of times when you go to Muslim, like, events, like banquets and things of that nature, you walk through the door and automatically the brother's on one side, the sister's on one side. You don't see your husband again until the end of the night, that kind of thing. This isn't something that's formal. It's really an arts experience. So they're able to come in and have a date night together. Yeah, enjoy each other and see our stories and connect and build with them. So it's really cool. It's an experience from the beginning to the end. And people will have enjoyed it, and the intention is to take it to different cities, and we're working on a podcast now.
Excellent. So whenever you get the podcast up and running, inshallah, please tag me, let me know, so I can let everybody else know who's paying attention and looking for alternate forms of either entertainment or another way to find out more about Islam. What is something that you would like Muslims to take away from it who have come to view the show? And what is something you would like non-Muslims to take away from the performances?
Sure. For Muslims, there's a few reasons that I do this for Muslims. One is to create an artistic and a creative experience where we can, my shows have been 100% produced, acted, everything, written by Muslims. There's only been one show that was in Raleigh where we had a videographer who was non-Muslim. So I want Muslim artists to have a space to be, to perform, even if it's just, you know, for that night and you're just sharing a story. I want to provide a space for us, and that's very important. I also want Muslims to be able to come out, like I said, and have a date night or to have a family night. And everybody can come because all the stories are 100% good from anyone from, you know, a 4-year-old to a 40-year-old to a 94-year-old. So I want us to be able to see our stories and connect back to our purpose. And one thing that I'm doing is I'm doing straight up shows. Well, one of the shows, so it'll be Shahada Stories Presents, right? And the next show that we have coming up that will be live, and you're going to hear it here first, is Shahada Stories Presents Half the Deen, right? And these are going to be all love stories on stage. And one thing that I want that to do for Muslims is to reinforce our love for each other while we get married, how it strengthens our faith and grows us closer to God. Like, I want Shahada Stories to be something that strengthens our deen and strengthens our community. And then for non-Muslims, I want them to be able to see us in our brightest light. You know, I've seen so many, especially after the happenings in Florida, I'm seeing all these videos. I am so-and-so, and I'm a Muslim, and I'm human, too. And I told my husband, I'm kind of tired of seeing those. Like, why do we have to keep saying, like, just because I'm Muslim, it doesn't mean that I don't love chicken and, you know, all these other things. Like, just exist and be out here in the community and let people know who you are. So I tell people all the time, Shahada story, for me, is for Muslims, but it's for non-Muslims as well. It's for them to be able to come in our space and see who we are and enjoy that. And I've had quite a few, especially the first show in Charlotte. There were a lot of non-Muslims there, and it was raising views from them. They really enjoyed it.
Our call-in number is 805-727-7013 if you'd like to tell a friend. 805-727-7013.
Wow. I believe that I first witnessed you performing at an event that we had as a Masjid Action, Masjid Ashahid, and I was so blown away because it took a lot of confidence to get in front of people, but I think it helps when you have a message that you believe in. What is your message for Shahada Story?
My message for Shahada Story is, and I think everything that I do is kind of like, this is who I am, and I'm... In my world, the majority, strong, black, woman, Muslim, you know, intelligent, passionate, feminine, but also hardcore, like, I want to, so my message is to provide a spotlight for people like me.
Okay.
And we come in different shapes and sizes and different everything, but Shahada Stories is about providing a platform and entertainment, and then everything else that I do is that as well.
Okay, all righty. Do you have any suggestions for some of the artists out there that would like to take something to the stage? Because a coffee house is one thing. We'll talk about that with your spoken word project. And talking to friends in the living room is another thing, speaking to friends at the masjid. But to put on a production, would you encourage that for someone who's trying to reach a larger audience? And what goes into securing those type of venues for the people who are already at that step?
Sure. I would encourage it, but I would also say to have your ducks in a row, you know. Artistically, I believe that as Muslims, as we're trying to build community and change the way that the world sees us, but also change the way that we live our lives so that our kids can be excited about, you know, being Muslim and our space here and all that other stuff, just have it together. Like, I can't tell you how many people come to me and say, oh, well, you did this, and I want to do it, too. I have an idea, right? And they don't have any experience in the art. They don't have any experience in production. They don't, like, write a poem or send a song or anything. And that's not to discourage anyone from doing it, but we can't afford to put mess out there.
Okay.
So, my biggest piece of advice is to have your ducks in a row. Know what it takes. And I'll talk to you. I'll tell you exactly what it takes. I'm sure there are a few other people who have done this professionally and who are out there in production and things of that nature who can tell you what it will take because there's going to have to be trial and error. Getting a facility is an art as a Muslim. And I don't know if this is a shared experience that people have other places, but unfortunately, a lot of people do not want us in their facilities. And a quick story. The facility that we used here in Charlotte. When I initially went to go see the space, I took my husband with me, and I was covered, but I had sort of my head wrapped sort of in a bun, and a hat on top of that. And you know, I it was winter. I think I had on like a turtleneck or something like that. So I don't think upon coming through the door she understood that I was Muslim. And I knew this because I've been securing venues in Charlotte for a long time now for different performances. So I wouldn't say that I misrepresented who I was, but I didn't offer up that this was a Muslim show. She said, so what is it? I said, oh, it's a storytelling about coming of faith stories. And she said, okay. And I could tell she wanted to know more, but she also wanted to rent out her space. So she rented the space for me. So the night of the event when we started to show up, I could see her scrambling a little bit. She was looking like, what's going on here? Because all of these covered women and hijabis, these were the storytellers. Bearded men and stuff like that started to show up. And the theater we were using was in sort of like a rural area. It was still sort of in Charlotte, but outside of Charlotte. And I could see her a little bit panicked. And I remember her coming to me, telling me, we need to keep the back door shut and, you know, so people can't, you know, like, Yeah, and one of my friends told me that when, because in part of the story we call it a van, and they said when we opened up with her van, she almost lost it.
Oh, no.
And I could tell the whole night she was jittery, but, you know, alhamdulillah, we handled ourselves correctly, and that's another thing I would say. When you're out here using community spaces and things of that nature, and people have ideas based on what they've seen on the news or just ignorance about Muslims,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a teaching opportunity. So for us to be professional and to handle ourselves in a way where they can't say anything bad about us when we leave out the door. So getting a venue can be difficult. Mm-hmm. That's why at this point, I don't typically disclose all information up front to people unless I never lie. But, mm-hmm. you know, I tell them what they need to know so they don't get a chance to discriminate based on what they think they know about Muslims. So it's very important to understand that you're going through the door. Oftentimes we don't have our own spaces. So when you're using someone else's space, be prepared to answer questions that might be uncomfortable sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's not right, but it's just the world that we live in. So until we get our own spaces, we have to understand that that is probably the most difficult thing about putting on a production space.
Well, listeners, you're still here with us. Thank you so much. If you like what you're hearing and would like to continue listening to shows like this one, please generously donate to our program through PayPal. You can use religionmeansalive@gmail.com. This will enable continued broadcasting and help us reach our goal centered on taking our mission from the airwaves to the streets.
Thank you for breaking that down for us, Sister Hannah, because I'm often one who encourages people to go after their dreams and their goal and have the courage to tell their story, or as an Ummah, tell our story, as an African American, tell our story. And you mentioned some of the difficulties that some people may face trying to simply rent a venue or to be heard. So that's another mm-hmm. reason I wanted to really promote Shahada Stories and any of the other projects that you have upcoming, because those things, as you mentioned, which is perfect, can be a teaching opportunity. Someone who, like the lady who saw it and color drained from her face pretty much, mm-hmm. sit down and go through it, and they may learn something. They may have mm-hmm. something to counter the machine that is the negativity that is fueled on so much of the televisions right now, and especially during this political season. A lot of people are using fear as a conduit as opposed to offering their best measure of confidence in what their abilities are as far as taking the country in a different place. That's their battle cry, to fight with fear, and I'd like for us to fight it with truth and relatability. One other thing that I wanted to mention, too, before I ask you about some other projects, is there was a quote that one of my favorite artists, the whole wide world, Nina Simone, stated. And she felt that an artist's duty, as far as she's concerned, is to reflect the time. So along mm-hmm. with Shahada Stories, I know that you've written things regarding Sandra Bland, and I also remember you doing a piece on Trayvon Martin. Would you like to speak on how you use your art also as an activist?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know when I started performing at, like, certain types of events, but it's kind of become a thing for me over the past couple of years. There are people who are asking, will you come and do a piece for this rally that we're doing, or this vigil, or something like that. And really, that's become sort of my favorite way to perform, because it gives me, I work well as an artist with the topic. You know, some artists just sit down and they write based on what they're feeling in that moment and that type of thing. That ain't me. Like, I need to know where I'm going in order to get there, you know? And so if it's something that I'm already feeling passionate about, like Sandra Bland or Trayvon Martin or whatever, it makes it a lot easier for me. And I found that at rallies and vigils and things like that, poetry performances made for good soundbites for news and things of that nature, because they're able to take maybe a major chunk of your performance and put it into sort of a newsreel, and it sort of encapsulates everything that's been said about that movement. So I've been doing that here in Charlotte and in other cities for a long time now. It's connected to my purpose. You know, I've never been one to shy away from difficult topics. I grew up in a household with parents who always fought for what was right. And so this is just an extension of that. So I am at my core and at my best, I believe, an artist and a writer. And so when I can sit down and write about what's happening in the world and then be able to stand on a stage and deliver that to people and sometimes make them cry or make them feel in a way that they didn't know they felt about it, or able, you know, be able to capture, like, the emotion of the moment. It's a really, really major charge that Allah has blessed me with, and I accept it.
MashaAllah. I appreciate you saying that, because until recently, when a lot of devastating things were occurring in various communities, to me, a lot of our poets had gone silent, and anybody with any poetic or lyrical skills were only lending them to people to dance for. So I am very sad that some of the events have occurred, but I am very proud of the people like yourself who have stepped forward and given voice to a movement or a cause or a purpose. Where some people may not watch a newsreel, they may read a poem. They may click on that on Facebook. You know, they're looking for something that may not be as heavy with the graphics, with the pictures that remind you of the people that are no longer with us, or the ways that they died, or the angry things that people say that get mixed in. They may pull out that sheet of paper and read what you have to say, or click that YouTube video and listen as they're riding to work or doing something. So I appreciate that you like actually planting seeds of goodness and clarity into most of your work. How long have you been writing?
I think I've been writing just in general, creative writing, since high school or maybe before then. Where I started writing to say, maybe I want to do poetry. And, started in college when I was at North Carolina A&T. I specifically remember a friend of mine calling me saying that she wanted to sing for an open mic, and I said it was going to be in my dorm. And I had no idea that she could sing. I knew her for a long time. And so she sang for me over the phone, and I was blown away because I didn't know she had a voice. And so instinctively that challenged me, and I was like, you know what, I think I'm going to do a poem. And so I started performing then. That night we both performed. And so that was about 2002, and I haven't looked back since then. We performed together, me and her, as a group. Most of them, like, sort of theme songs. It was kind of like a poetry type thing. Pretty much in different spots in the country. And after that was over, and that lasted for maybe a good, like, 5-7 years, I just did more spoken word on my own and started an open mic night here in Charlotte. And sort of I've just been performing since then. It's, like I said, one of my biggest loves.
Okay. So what I understand you to say, you really honed it in college or came to the realization that it was something that you could use. So for any future writers out there, you don't have to be born with a quill in your hand. Like, I've been writing poetry since I was 2, or I've been writing poetry since I was in 3rd grade. It is something that can come along later that you fine-tune pretty much.
Oh, for sure. And just the key is consistency. Like, it's like once you pick up that pen, as long as you keep using it, you'll get better. It's so fun to look back at, like, my college performances, and I cringe. I'm like, oh, that was horrible.
Oh, wow.
You know, the crowd liked it or whatever. I was able to put a few rhymes together. But as I've developed as a person, I've developed as a writer. And, you know, like, just that's the thing. A lot of people say, I've always wanted to write poetry, but I don't know how.
Okay. Well, one thing we've mentioned of people who do spoken word poetry for profit, and I also heard you mention, you know, those of us like yourself who do it for purpose, there are also people who use it as a form of healing or something that's cathartic. And I'd like to ask you about a recent piece that you wrote regarding missing your father during Ramadan on a blog post that you have. Could you share that blog post with us for anyone who wants to check it out and kind of elaborate on what that writing was about?
Absolutely. And that was just a blog post. It's the month of Ramadan, and when I wrote it was also Father's Day. So poetry, as you just said, is a healer, and writing is a healer for me. So I do freelance writing and things of that nature as well. When I wrote that post, I just wrote about grief and how it's sort of this thing that can sometimes linger around even years after. My dad passed away in 2012, and, you know, if I think about it too much right now, I could probably bust into tears. Yeah. So I wrote that post for people who are, especially during times like Ramadan and, you know, Eid and things that are family time, who are missing out on their loved ones. Sometimes I think we forget about those people. So for me, writing is a means for healing others, but also for healing myself.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate you making that effort because, as I shared in a few of the groups I'm in on social media, there are quite a few people who read it. They're like, subhanAllah, you know, alhamdulillah. This really touched a chord for me because it is a family time. So, again, using your skills and abilities to help heal other people, I see, is pretty much highly recommended. I look forward to many more of the things that you may have upcoming. So, along with the Shahada stories, and I believe you have a page on Facebook regarding that for people to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so Shahada Stories is our main hub is on Facebook.
Okay.
So Shahadah Stories, Stories. And as we work towards the podcast and the live shows, there'll be more information about everything coming up there.
Okay, that's excellent. Do you have any other projects that you have aside from Shahada Stories that you're working on?
Sure. So I've been one of the creators and the host of the Artists in Open Mic Nights for 5 years. Briefly, we took a pause just to sort of reassess. And now I'm taking that over, just me. I'm rebranding, and so I'll be starting and hosting Open Mic Nights again, inshallah, this year, coming up very soon, within the next couple of months. Those will be here in Charlotte. Our Open Mic Nights are for everybody. They're really fun. And, you know, I invite, and they're typically free, so anybody who's interested, come out and experience that as well. I'll send you those links, too.
Okay, and what goes on, I've been to one of the events, but what goes on with the Artist Inn, and what do you hope to accomplish with that, you know, pulling so many artistic people together and people who have never done anything artistic in their life in the same room?
Yeah, when we started, it was about that. It was really about Muslims and about us creating an artistic space in Charlotte for Muslims to perform. And what happened once we started was something that was pretty amazing. It became one of the most diverse open mic nights in Charlotte. It was always, for the most part, you know, we had a very good crowd. People from all different levels of skill would come in and perform. And there are so many people who would start out and it would be their first time performing. And that kind of lends itself to what you said about people who are not necessarily young and weren't born with a pen in their hand, but decide they want to become an artist. They would come to our open mic nights. And many of them now are performing all over the city. You know, like, we provide a space for people to feel okay with, like, the fact that they're not Maya Angelou, but that they still have something to say, and typically it's really good as well. What I want to do with it as we move forward is to really use it as a space for community, a space for healing when unfortunate, like, shootings and things like that occur. Like, I believe in healing through the arts, and I really want to focus on that, like using it as a space for community to come together regardless of who you are and what you represent. I want you to have a space there.
Thank you so much for that. As someone who participates in poetry and spoken word and all the other artsy people that are out there, one trend that I noticed as we made it through the 90s, there were not a lot of places to go and read poetry to hear it. You have certain segments here in Charlotte, anyway, where they're dedicated to the arts, but it's not a widespread thing. And people actually look for it. I'll see someone I haven't seen in about 10 years. We last saw each other because they used to participate in open mic and spoken word. And when the trend kind of died, all of those little places just disappeared or became other type of venues. So there are people who are literally authentic to what creativity does to your soul, and they're always seeking out places. Where do you host your Artist Inn events, and how often do you have them?
So up until now, the events have been at Mug's Coffee in South Charlotte off of Park Road every second Saturday of the month. We paused at the beginning of the year, again, to reassess, and I'm taking over. As I'm taking over, I'm seeking out a new venue. I have one in mind. I went to this yesterday. It's a pretty cool space. But to be honest with you, space is very important to me. It has to feel, it has to have a certain feeling, because I believe the space that you create is sort of centered around the feeling that you create for your open mic night. So I have one place in mind. I'm looking for another. So I'll be able to release that information in a couple of weeks.
Okay, excellent. And again, by all means, tag me or send it to my inbox or something.
Sure.
So I can let other people know, because there are people all the time who are just looking for a place to, we used to call it commune, where you just all come together with like hearts, like spirit, like mind, and just bumbling energy. And you need a way to channel that in a good way. And me and another good friend of mine who's a spoken word artist upstate, we're talking about how being around other people, other creatives, can fuel your own creativity. So
yeah.
I'll look forward to hearing more from that. Also, I heard you mention sister-in-law. So you're married. Now, for the women who are listening to this, who are trying to get in a great many things, how do you balance your home life with everything you're trying to give the world and everything you're trying to do for your community? Do you have to make a choice of one or the other, or are you able to integrate your efforts?
I think the choice starts when you choose your mate.
Okay.
Alhamdulillah, I feel so blessed. I tell my husband this all the time. I am a lot. Like, I'm involved in a lot, not just through arts, but other community events and things of that nature. And I didn't know that I needed him. And by that, I mean, I always said I want a super artsy guy, somebody who does, like, poetry and, you know, all of that sexy stuff and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I realized, and my husband, he's an artist in his own right. He's a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, he's like a sports guy and all that other stuff. Like, I needed that balance. I think balance is important. When you are the type of woman who is very driven and you're out there and all that other stuff, you have to have a support system. I see a lot of times, a lot of my sisters, get into these relationships with these brothers, and it don't necessarily mean that they're a bad guy or whatever, but they want a very traditional wife, right?
Okay.
Somebody who's going to be at home, dinner's going to be on the table, you know, things are going to be done right in that moment. That I don't have anything against that brother. He just ain't my brother. And if you're a sister like me, find a brother who is okay with the fact that you're going to be out here, you know, and be able to strike that balance in your marriage where, you know, y'all are working together towards similar goals. I think that is so important. I'm glad you asked me that, because I know some sisters with very bright lights who ultimately those lights end up being very dim because they get married into situations where somebody can't exist in their same life. That is almost oppression. Like, if you got a story inside of you waiting to be told and you don't have a supportive spouse, that can feel very stifling. It can be a difficult thing to deal with. So I just, any sisters who especially are artists and creators, you can be that and a wife. It just has to be with the right husband.
Thank you so much for that, because I do admire you. I see you both involved in different projects. I see you out together. And then I see you doing solo efforts. And again, there are very many talented sisters who have their commitments at home. So I feel what you said, that's very, very important. You're just saying, you know, have that mate who understands. You guys have got that balance. You've got that healthy respect for one another so that nobody's stifled because someone feels intimidated or the light seems to be shining. You both shine.
Yeah, it has to be a man who has a sense of who he is. Like, if you get a man who don't know who he is and you know who you are, recipe for disaster. He has to know who he is and be comfortable with that, because that means that he's working towards his own goals and dreams too, and y'all working towards that together. But if all he sees is you blowing up or you shining and you going towards your dreams and he's sitting at home mad, like, you're going to come home. And that's also, I believe, as a creator, like, I can't come home to somebody mad every time I walk through the door and then plan to still create. Those things don't work together. It stifles your creativity.
So this, I wasn't expecting all this to come out, but I think this is very important, because as we encourage people to follow their dreams and their goals, you're right, as you said before, have your foundation in place, because there are taxing situations that will occur, and we don't know what they are until we get in them. So I guess the best experience would be maybe speak to people who actually do this for a living or who do it the majority of the time and find out how they make it work with their home, if they're a mother, how they negotiate the time with their children. If they're caring for a parent, we're all in different kind of situations. But I feel you, when you have a purpose or you feel driven, it becomes urgent. It becomes urgent, and you must follow that, and the best way to balance that in your life. So I think that was some advice I wasn't planning on even asking you about, but I think that fits in. It really, really does.
Well, I can live along with you guys.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to take a brief moment to thank all the callers who called in to listen to the program this evening, or if you're listening to online, thank you so much. If you are interested in hosting your own show here on Blog Talk Radio, please reach out to me, Kimberly Kalima, at theradiantbrilliantshow@gmail.com. I'm also found on Facebook under The Radiant Brilliant Show. I welcome you aboard. We can really add to this project and increase the positivity and the good things that are available for people to listen to on Internet radio. Now back to our show.
Do you have any other things that you do other than poetry and spoken word and director? It seems like you do a whole bunch. I heard you mention things in different communities. What are some other ways that you lend yourself in the community?
So I use my writing a lot, and I use it to make money as well, you know. I do freelance writing, like I said. I write for a publication that's here out of Charlotte called The Charlotte Agenda.
Okay.
I work on different, like, campaigns and things of that nature, doing communication stuff. So I just use my art and my love for writing and communicating mm-hmm. and sort of public speaking and all that stuff to make money as well. In addition to that, I work for a nonprofit. Oh, love it, love it, love it. It's called yeah. Praying for Others.
Mm-hmm.
I say it's one of the, well, we all say that work there is almost like a little Disney World. It's one of the safest spaces in Charlotte. Actually, in North Carolina, I would say, for teenagers. I work as an advisor. I teach teens okay. about the art of spoken word poetry, and they in turn become poets and do these amazing live shows at, like, the Blumenthal for nonprofits and honor nonprofits and then also local heroes. It's one of my greatest works, Playing for Others. If you ever just want to seek out an organization to donate to or be involved mm-hmm. with it, if you're in Charlotte, I would suggest that you look them up. They're really awesome. It's not just really good for young people, but for adults. And we're hiring right now. I think we're still hiring for adult advisors. So if you're an artist who can teach, we're looking for one more slam poet advisor. I think we're still looking for music, dance, and there's one other. It's a nice little part-time job, but it's more than that. It's like an experience.
And I looked that up online, and the website is just easy peasy. It's www.playingforothers.org.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you're out there listening and you're in the North or South Carolina area or Charlotte, they're hiring. They're looking for creatives, and working and doing what you like is really not work. So check out the playingforothers.org site. Whoever put it together has really got an eye for art and colors. It's very mm-hmm. eye-catching and beautiful and easy to navigate.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for mentioning that. That's another plus. And I'm glad that you said that, too, about how you use writing for money, because with culture and with heritage, we have our stories told so many different ways, whether it's making a quilt, whether it's braiding maps into our hair, we were slaves, you know, to help other ones escape another way, whether we use the drums, the writing and the art that we do can also be used for jobs and to help companies communicate, corporations communicate in situations like that. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because somebody may have that particular skill, and why they may not be able to write a poem and formulate it is something they might be able to use to feed their family.
Right.
And to not be afraid to use that as well. So that is certainly another plus. Did you have any other agencies that you work with, or any other nonprofits, or any other, I call them love projects, things that are just close to your heart that you'd like to mention or make aware?
I think that's it. I'm really trying to hone in on what now yeah. that I'm involved in.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to make sure that I can give my all and my best to the things that matter.
Okay. One other question that I had for you was, there was a little incident that occurred in Orlando recently. Mm-hmm. And I've heard a lot of opinions and a lot of suppositions and things that could have been prevented and all kind of things that's going on. And because of the person who carried it out, you know, purportedly was Muslim. Do you have anything to say to the Muslims that are out there who are being looked at kind of funny at their job, or people wondering, you know, what can we expect next? Maybe encourage them, because you speak out on things like this.
Right. I spoke on a panel last week, actually. We had a vigil here in Charlotte, an interfaith one. This is the piece of advice that I can give to Muslims. Live out loud. Most of the Muslims that I know are some of the most amazing people that you would ever meet. Biggest hearts, like kind people, people who are out here in the community or in their small Muslim communities, like doing major things. You can't just, we can't just do it in the Muslim community. We have to get out here and meet our brothers, like, and sisters, regardless of who they are, what background they come from. Like, live out loud. Like, give yourself an opportunity to spread your wings so that anytime anybody says anything about a Muslim, that somebody would say, that's just not the case, because I know fill in the blank. I know Rashida, Muhammad, I know Khalil, I know Hannah, and that ain't who they are. To me, all of these after the fact going on TV saying we condemn the act of so-and-so, like, that's an afterthought. Like, I don't feel like apologizing for something I didn't do. I feel like living every day in a way that everybody who knows me and even people who don't know me can say, wow, that's a Muslim.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like that a lot, because I feel you on the point. There's a point beyond where everybody gets to start apologizing. I think I'm most comfortable stating that I think that was horrible, and I feel very bad for the families. And then go on with your purpose of, one thing that I had as a rule, because I also do social media for a company that does illustrations of covered women, is when I was learning everything I could online about how to do social media, they suggested that if something bad happens that's related to what you're trying to do, fall back. And that is one rule that I broke. They were saying if it's a major catastrophe that goes on and it's kind of similar to what you're doing, don't do anything that week, or don't do any. And that was one rule of all the ones that I saw that I have not followed. If anything else, I try as hard as I can to counter that and bring a brighter point and say, but you looked over there for so long, look over here. There's a brighter story. There's a brighter story. So that's one thing that I didn't follow. So I feel you 100% on pushing your purpose and your idea as hard as they push the negative to push the positive. Well, Ms. Hannah, I want to thank you so very much for everything that you shared with me tonight. I was trying to think of some good questions for you, but you really brought the filler, and you brought a lot of things for people to talk about.
Oh, wow, you really opened me up and had me, you know, say some things I needed to hear for myself, so I really appreciate it.
Okay, well, if you could just restate for everyone who might have tuned in late or before they go, how they can find out more about Shahada Stories and where it can be located on social media, and any information about the blog that you, the organization, Charlotte Agenda, that you work for also, and then just a little bit more, or the website again for the nonprofit that you work for.
Absolutely. So you can find information about Shahada Stories specifically on our Facebook page. Also, there are videos from our Raleigh show and a promo video that are on our YouTube page. If you type in Shahada Stories on Facebook or YouTube, they should come up. SHAHADAHSTORIES. You can use that as a hashtag as well, and it should come up on Facebook, Twitter, that type of thing. So we're out there on social media. Please, please, please follow us, and we'll be having more information coming soon about what we're doing next. Playing for Others is the nonprofit that I work for that's also hiring part-time creatives right now. And also, even if you just want to donate to a nonprofit that's doing amazing work or know about them in some way, www.playingforothers, PLAYINGFORTHERS.org, amazing organization. And then I do some freelance writing for a local online publication that reaches thousands of people every day. You don't have to be in Charlotte to get it. It's just a fun publication, charlotteagenda.com.
Well, thank you so very much again, Ms. Hannah. I appreciate your wisdom. I appreciate the brief education that you shared with us regarding the venues and Muslims just being seen, getting out there, quit apologizing, and start acting. So thank you again.
Absolutely.
For joining our show, Sister Hannah. And I'll be seeing you soon, inshallah, in the community. And I'd like to thank all of our guests who tuned in again for another episode of the Radiant Brilliance Show presented by Religion Means Alive. If you'd like to be a guest, please email us at guestinfotrbs@gmail.com, guestinfotrbs@gmail.com. And if you'd like to offer feedback or if you have a story idea, simply email theradiantbrilliantshow@gmail.com, theradiantbrilliantshow@gmail.com. We also have a page on Google Plus and Facebook and also our site here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, everyone, again for tuning in, and we will see you guys on next Thursday.